This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's go back to the Stars, back to their 3-1 victory to give them a 3-1 series lead. And should the rest of the NHL playoff field be terrified by the return of Miro? You know, it was Granlund's world.
Yeah, it was.
Usually it's been Mikko's world. But Granlund, don't call him Mikhail. All right, it's Michael. Give me cut number 4, and let's get another Granlund or Mikhail.
Here's Granlund, 2-on-1. Granlund shoots, and scores! Mikhail Granlund, second of the night. Dallas takes a 2-1 lead with 2 minutes to play in the second.
All right, so Mikhail Granlund was just absolutely outstanding. I don't want it to get lost in the mix when we talk about offense versus pitching. Like for the Rangers, I thought that Jake Ottinger was top-notch yesterday as well. Fair to say?
Oh, Ottinger was fantastic. You know, was it – how many did it the total out to be? Because I know when he hit 31, I was like, that's what I'm talking about, because I saw the note that 31 was the most in the series so far. And so whenever he got 31 saves, I was telling everybody around the room.
That's what it finished.
All
with.
Right. So he's tied. He tied what he did in game one. And like, that's awesome. That's great. Ottinger was he was necessary last night. And so many occasions where you're just like, what a save, dude.
Yeah.
Like what is. And now the other thing is we talked about how he hasn't had sparkling numbers. But then he gives you a game like that. And that goes back to what DeBoer's been saying all along. It's not the 98% save percentage.
Sure.
It's when he does it.
Yeah.
You know, he did it in a home game when it mattered, when they really needed to go up and really put their foot on their throat. So that was really nice to see from him. But I go back to Granlund, Kevin, and I loved hearing his interview after the game. If you didn't hear it with ESPN, it was really like his voice is fun and Finnish. The Finnish have fun voices. I was texting with Spittle, the hockey hawk, about it, and I was like, man, he just seems so free on this line. And he does, because Mikko's there. Now, Granlund's a good player.
Yeah.
He's a really good 200-foot player. He does everything right. But because he has this space, I was talking about that with Madonna earlier, there's more space and time for him to do things, because they have to pay so much attention to Mikko on that line. So getting that out of him, now that you're starting to see it, this is like, oh, we got to double team somebody. Who are we going to double team? And now we got to leave this guy open, and he's a really good player too, and he's going to bury him on us. So what a night, man.
By the way, if you're looking for something to do tomorrow, Bud Light Watch Party tomorrow on the PNC Plaza at the south entrance of the American Airlines Center for Dallas and Winnipeg.
The Winter Pigs.
I'm
going with the Winter Pigs.
Potential to clinch the series right there. I wanted to talk about special teams before we talk a little bit more
about Aubrey, baby.
The return of Miro. NHL hockey teams. By the way, do you like this? This is a text I got yesterday during the game. We have foster kittens right now, only like 3 days old, maybe. I was feeling one of the boys when Granlund got his second goal to make it 2-1, and that kitten is officially named Granlund now.
I love it. I love it.
I do too.
The headline on ESPN today on the NHL side is Granlund nets 3, but quote, job's not done. And that was Granlund last night. Obviously, the job's not done. We got a lot of work to do, but that was a good win. And that goes along with the line that Khudobin said last night when he hopped on the microphone and said, "We are not going home." And everybody went insane, and I loved it.
Remember how amazing that was in the moment?
It was so good, and we needed it, too, because that was the bubble, right?
Yeah.
That was when everybody was kind of at home, and we're sitting there going, man, we needed that drop all the time.
Now, we've talked a lot about the home and road split problems for Winnipeg, but I want to talk about a new problem that it's not really new. I guess we've seen it throughout the series, but man, was it on display yesterday. The difference in the special teams conversion rates in this series. What do you think Winnipeg is on the power play? If you had to guess for the entire series.
Like percentage-wise?
Yeah.
65%? Is that low or high?
That is way too high.
Okay. 45%?
Okay. Still too high. I will tell you the answer.
21%.
6%.
Gross.
They are... One for six. Oh man, even that's too much. Ooh, they are 1 for 16. And I know some people are gonna be like, that's actually closer to 7%. Fine, I'll give you 7%.
That's great.
They're 1 for 16 on the power play in this series.
And the one was last night?
No, actually, it was not. It was back in Winnipeg.
Okay,
because in the two games in Dallas, 0 for 7 on the power play. 0 for 7 in these two games in Dallas. And so even back in Winnipeg, that means they're only 1 for 9. This has been hugely problematic for the Winnipeg Jets. But it only really matters if your opponent does something about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, here's what the Stars have done about it. The Stars have scored at least one power play goal in all six of their home playoff games.
Have they scored any shorthanded? Am I wrong? Because that would be...
I would have to go back and check on that.
Isn't that a feather in your cap if you've been holding them?
They got a shorthanded score against them.
I know they did it against Colorado. All right. That's great to hear because you definitely need that PK, which has been very effective with Harley on the quarterback in that thing.
And you got two more power play goals last night, as you probably could have guessed because he scored all of the goals. Both of them were from Granlund. And so you have gotten power play goals from the Stars in every single home game, the playoffs thus far this season.
Keep doing that then.
Now, there is a potential problem.
You do realize we're still not done with round two of the playoffs.
I know.
It feels like it's been 2 years that these hockey playoffs have
You're right. On. You are right. And that's why I want to bring up a potential problem and why I think Miro can help solve that. Okay. No team has been shorthanded in the playoffs as much as the Stars. So look, they're doing great against Winnipeg. Like they really, really are. And it's not ending up being problematic and they're going to shut it down. But whether you think it's going to be Edmonton, then Carolina, or how if they keep moving on, whoever you think it's going to be against, that feels like eventually that's going to be a problem that's going to come back to bite you, is no team in the playoffs has been shorthanded as much as the Stars. I think part of the reason for those penalties has been getting consistently at times beaten on defense. And that's where I think Miro can help you out. Well, and like that Sagan penalty yesterday was ridiculous.
Yeah, and we had, 15 high sticks in the last game and up there.
Maybe that's another thing. It's like, hey, just remember what level
your
stick's at. But like,
it's easy to say.
Tyler Sagan very much felt like he was like, hey, if I'm in close quarters, nobody can see this first pull in the jersey, and he's like, and if they miss that one, then I can definitely do the second one. And you're like, no, they saw it.
Yeah.
But I wonder if...
And then Jamie Benn saw a fight going on. He was like, I don't like the way that looks. And
he
dove in there and started punching people, and I love that.
I wonder if...
That's my captain.
Haskinen... Look, I appreciate the physicality from the captain. There are other things that I still think he needs to be better.
I'm going
to
only ask him to do what he can do.
Okay.
If that is punch people, then do that, buddy.
Fair enough. So Haskinen, I think, can help make up for some of those potential defensive deficiencies, not the least of which the reason is he can play like 25 minutes per game. I know immediately he didn't come out and play 25 minutes, but you've seen it's possible so if that's what you want.
I agree with you, but not yet.
Sure.
And yesterday I was being asked, and Alec, you're a runner. You take time off from running an extended amount of time. I said... about 2 weeks before he's right. Now, Jesse Holly would always tell us in the NFL, you need 3 games before you're in game mode. But Alec, is about 2 weeks right? I mean, he's been getting in shape, but game shape's a little bit different.
Yeah, getting your feet underneath you, you hear that used a lot as a cliche, but it's true. Like, finding your feet again is super real. And I feel like for every sport that has to play into effect, but at least 2 weeks, at least. I think that's like, that's for an athlete of his caliber, 2 weeks is probably fair. For a lot of other people, it's probably a few more like a month. And we talk about it all the time, where especially football players, any kind of physical sport, they're like, I need like a year off to really feel normal again, you know, to feel like a normal operating functional human. But yeah, 2 weeks is where I'd say, okay, it's kind of like we were talking about with the Rangers offense and Marcus Semien. It was like 100 at bats, 100 plate appearances. Yeah. We're going to really get a feel that 2 week mark. He's going to know if he feels good this postseason or not.
Yeah. I think by the time we get into the next series, you'll start to see that a little bit. But Kevin last night played 14 minutes, almost 15 minutes. And we were kind of keeping track of Petrovic's and Bischel's numbers, too, because they were in the 12-16-minute range. Last night, they were 7:50 and 7:15. So he did eat into their minutes a little bit.
Which is fine.
But understandably so, because when he's on the ice, you trust him. His ability to keep the puck in zone. There was one moment last night I thought he was going to get a slashing or a hooking where it was a breakaway and he was trying to track it down. Fortunately, Otter kicked the save out, and that was awesome to see too. But I just have so much faith. And then you go watch him too, man. What's happening defensively if somebody goes and stands in front of the net? Miro, just keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
He just rams in there and is like, get out of the way. You're not doing that today. And he's a big body that can do that.
Think about the depth that this team has when we're talking about easing Robertson and Haskinen back into the lineup. Or like you had been talking about easing Robertson back in the lineup. Now it's about Haskinen. And we're not that far removed from, good Lord, how are we going to do this without those two? And you've seen the depth.
It's perfect
you've
timing.
Seen, you just mentioned numerous players that have stepped up along the way. I know we've talked a lot about Rantanen, but I don't want to make it sound like that's the only thing happening for this team. You have seen numerous players from Harley to Petrovic to Ottinger all step up. And I think that's a big deal. And that's why that depth has allowed you to be like, hey, you want to ease Robertson back in? No problem. Hey, you want to ease Haskinen back in? Probably one of the top five all-around defensemen in the NHL. You want to ease him back in? No problem. And you keep winning games. And you're in complete control of this series right now.
You know who led the team in hits last night, Kevin?
I just always say Bischel. Even if he only got 8 minutes, he figured it out.
Granlund did.
Okay, how many did he have?
He had six last night.
Ooh.
So in addition to having a hat trick, he's like, yeah, I'm also pushing people around too. And then Marchment, who we haven't even seen a Marchment have a good game yet. He's doing a lot of other things, but I just don't think he's had a game there. I'm just like, man, Mason Marchment, you know?
Yeah.
But he had five hits last night as well. And then you look, we talked about this with Mikko a long time ago. The minutes. His minutes were 23 last night, the most out of everybody. When he was with Colorado, he played a ton of minutes. And it was interesting on how they were going to manage that whenever they got here. So I'm curious to see how that top scoring line has worked in when they go on the road on Thursday.
And we mentioned it earlier in the show, but I go back to this. I'm not saying it's personal, but when Jake Ottinger says behind winning the Stanley Cup, his number one.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit mensteaclinic.com. That's mensteaclinic.com.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app. Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Goal is to be the starter for the 2026 U.S. Olympic team.
You keep putting up a 97% save percentage, people will be like, all right.
It kind of feels like he's like, all right, this is our tryout. I realize that's not maybe specifically
chant? What was the chant last night, Kevin?
Otter's better.
And I all I could hear was Tolos in that arena going, Otter's better. That's all I heard.
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't know if that was just me wanting to hear it, but Tolos, let me know when y'all are in the AAC. Are y'all sitting there screaming better the way Kevin does? Because I love it.
Better. So the Stars win 3-1. They're up in the series 3-1. We go back to a later game tomorrow, theoretically 8:30, maybe closer to 8:45 or 8:50, as the Stars attempt to close this out and get to the Western Conference Finals for the third straight year, where it's going to be Edmonton. Coming up next, we will do our Shakira ticket giveaway. We will talk with Bruce Bochy, but also the Metroplex's history of number one picks and how you think Cooper Flagg will fit into the bunch. Next, right here on The Fan.
The second pick will be made by the San Antonio Spurs, and that means that the number one pick in the 2025 NBA draft goes to the Dallas Mavericks.
Now, let's talk about the history of DFW's major pro teams getting the top pick in the draft. We got Bruce Bochy coming up in just a few minutes. The Mavericks have had the top pick twice now. Only one other time. The other time was 1981 with Mark Aguirre.
Good guy.
Yeah, I was going to ask
Pretty good player.
Do you count these as a win, lose, or draw? I count that as a win.
He was a win as a player here. It's unfortunate that he couldn't have been a lifelong Maverick.
Fair.
And all those things, and his relationship with the Mavericks kind of deteriorated.
That is very fair. How many times do you think the Cowboys have had the number one draft pick?
I'm going to say four.
Three.
Troy Aikman was one.
Correct. That's a win.
Yeah, that's absolutely a win. Was Bob Lilly?
No.
No?
He was the first Cowboys pick, not the number one pick.
All right, throw him out there, man.
Russell Maryland?
Oh, yeah, I remember him. I'll take that as a win for me.
Is that a draw?
Did we win Super Bowls?
We did.
And all was right, he
so that's a win?
Yep.
Okay. All right, I like it. Ed Too Tall Jones?
That's a dub.
That was in 1974.
Maybe for us, one of the most memorable nicknames ever.
Absolutely. So that's Aguirre, Russell Maryland, Troy Aikman, and Ed Too Tall Jones. Win, 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 win. The other one, and I think this one is more complicated than people think, the Texas Rangers.
Okay.
They had the number one overall pick one time, and it was David Clyde. I get how David Clyde would go down as a loss because he just didn't have a particularly memorable career, especially not here with Texas.
They messed him up.
They did. 100% I agree with that. Agree. But one of the reasons that they messed him up is by pushing him immediately into Major League Baseball. And that's where I wonder if this drifts towards a draw, because David Clyde had a hand in saving baseball here in Arlington because they were struggling with attendance. There were already complaints about like the different facilities that they had and everything like that. And I think some people, because there's only been a couple of years, some people were like, I don't know, maybe this market is not cut out for Major League Baseball. And David Clyde coming in like popped the attendance for his starts, especially that first one, like crazy, mm-hmm. and really helped kind of start to turn the tide attendance wise.
Yeah. So I would say that's a win ultimately when the trajectory for the franchise changed.
Yeah. And so I look at those players, and obviously like right now with the Wings, we've already had her on. You've got Paige Beckers as well, but you're talking about Troy Aikman, Ed Too Tall Jones, even Mark Aguirre, Russell Maryland that you feel solid about, and then David Clyde, who that story is probably more complex than most Rangers players ever. Where do you think that Cooper Flagg can fit into that hierarchy? And before you answer, I'm going to tell you an anecdote. Did you know that Cooper Flagg grew up watching DVDs that chronicled Larry Bird's career? When he would go to practice, he would be in his parents' minivan and he would be watching replays of Celtics games from the 1985-1986 series, an all-time great Celtics team, or just team, period, on his way to the practice.
All right. First off, I did go look, and you probably already know this, the Stars have never had the number one overall pick.
Correct. In Dallas.
In Dallas. It makes sense hearing that now after watching. Go watch Cooper Flagg if you have questions. I'll tell you again, go watch the Brian Scalabrine thing on Julian Edelman's podcast. But go watch Cooper Flagg if you have any questions, because when you watch his game, it looks like Larry Bird. And I'm not saying that because he's a white blonde guy. Like there are things physically that he does that aren't beautiful. Larry Bird did things that weren't beautiful but worked.
Agreed.
And he made passes that you were like, "What? Why did he do that?"
But we're not. But he's not good enough passer to be Magic Johnson. If people were concerned about it, he's not good enough at passing.
It's not flashy. It just happens, you know. And that's what Larry Bird would do, a over his head pass that you were like, "Oh, well, that's." It wasn't flashy.
Yeah.
It was just he needed to make that pass.
Yeah.
And so that's when I watch him, I get it. There are other times, Kevin, and I know this, I don't want to get like caught up here. Defensively, when I watch him, I see some Michael Jordan moments too. Block shots coming out of nowhere, the athleticism that he uses, the length that he plays with too. So knowing that what you just said about him and that he watched that, that makes a lot of sense that he's trying to mimic those styles of game.
From the 972, and this question came up a lot yesterday. I'm glad we got some clarity.
I am very happy.
If you're to believe in Tim McMahon, and especially when it comes to the Mavericks, he feels like he's usually pretty darn tuned in. Everybody keeps talking about the Mavs picking Cooper Flagg, but are we sure Nico is not going to trade that pick? And yesterday, Tim McMahon report was there are no offers that are being considered. They are making the pick. They're selecting.
They're not going to mess this up at all. They don't want. They don't want to even take a chance of screwing this up. And if and when Tim Cato came on, he was like, I don't know if you heard this line. He doesn't think Nico has the leash from Dumont that would require him to make that trade.
I mean, you would have to have an incredible leash to say that in the span of what would it be 4 months, I traded Luka Doncic and Cooper Flagg. Man, that would be freaking crazy. So
somebody said he's a more athletic Dirk. I disagree 1,000% with that.
Okay.
As far as shooting goes, Dirk's shot was like that was his calling.
Yeah, I agree. And Cooper Flagg is better defensively.
Defensively, they're completely different basketball players.
I agree with that. All right. Where do you think he will fit in this hierarchy? Because if you're gonna say he's gonna be Troy Aikman, that's great. Cross your fingers that he's like the Troy Aikman of Mavericks basketball. But that feels like a really high bar.
He won't be David Clyde.
Yeah.
But that other than he is bringing interest back to the Mavericks, which looked like for all next season would be lost.
Yeah.
There's still a contend. There's still about 38% to 60% of fans that are furious still, but they're going to come back for this.
By the way, somebody asked the ceiling. I think the ceiling is somewhat of a combination between Larry Bird, Scottie Pippen, and Kawhi Leonard.
I'll take it.
Like if you, I would
again. I mean, I guess
I would certainly hope so. Right now, brought to you by National Car Rental. Whether you're on the mound, at the plate, or on the road, National Car Rental invites you to stop waiting and start winning. Book like a winner today. And Olshan, we bring you Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, guys. How we doing?
Well, 4-game winning streak. It's hard to be upset about that. I was curious. I know it has nothing to do with the series itself, but the Rockies dismissed their manager right before this series started. Do you always feel some empathy for managers in that position, since you've surely been in a position before where you're like, hey, sometimes people don't know. Like, I couldn't control this, or maybe it wasn't my fault.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's never the manager's fault. So the arrow should always be pointing somewhere else. all kidding aside, I know Buddy Black well, very well. We do the guys trip. We all go together in the winter. So I spent some time with him then. So very a good, outstanding baseball man that, he had a tough deal that was dealt to him this year. And you understand that it's part of the game. I mean, changes are made. We made a change and, see if we can shake it up. And we as managers know it's usually pointing our way as part of what you deal with in this seat. But the only thing you can do is go ahead and keep doing the best job that you can. And I can tell you, Buddy was doing that. He never stopped trying to get it figured out. But you see it throughout baseball for years, and that it's just coaches, manager. It goes with the territory.
Are you or is Bud Black the better fisherman?
Buddy likes to fly fish, so we're probably about even there, because I don't fly fish as much up in Colorado. That's what they do. So, but if you go fishing anywhere else, oh no, Buddy, he's more of a outdoorsman as far as, well, he used to ski a little bit and all that stuff. On this trip, I would go ice fishing, but okay. He wouldn't.
Are you more of a bass or deep sea guy? Which one's your favorite?
You know what? My favorite is brackish water. I love redfish, speckled trout. We have a fish in Florida where I grew up called a snook, similar to a tarpon, but you can eat it. But tarpon fishing, all that's my favorite. And brackish water, and in the inlets there in Florida.
Yeah, well, that's what me and my buddies go down to Port O'Connor, and that's where we would go get our redfish and our blackfish as well down there. And that was always a lot of fun, making sure you got your limit and eating some good fish at the same time. And then every once in a while you catch a shark, and then that's a lot of fun.
A shark?
Yeah, just one of the little ones, just one of the little guys.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. I guess we should probably ask some baseball questions too. We'll save the fishing conversation for another day. How important or how clutch was the performance last night of Sean Armstrong? Like, you're in control of the game, but you can see a situation where it could slip away from you, and to have him come in there and just boom, 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 strikeout, 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 game over.
Yeah. Back-to-back nights. I mean, Webb had to come in the night before. He got in a jam and got the double play ball. Armstrong came in and, get three strikeouts. That's going to be part of his role now with his experience with a couple high leverage guys or our setup guy and closer down. Those guys will get their roles bumped up. You can't use Garcia every day. Hobie's got the Milner, I'm talking about, he's got the experience to pitch late in the ball game. He saw the great job he did last night. But it was big. It was. That game gets away. Here you lose a setup guy. Well, he just became our closer. You lose him and lose the game, yeah, that's going to be demoralizing, I think, for the club.
Do you have an update for us right now on Chris Martin?
No, I don't. No, I just checked. We have not gotten results yet, so hoping for the best there. But it's going to be, my guess is, he's got a good chance to head to the IL.
And, I know it sounded like Luke Jackson avoided a more potentially catastrophic injury, but how's he doing?
Yeah, I walked in with him yesterday. The hand, the swelling had pretty much gotten down. I think we got lucky on this. We did some more, took some more pictures of it, no fracture. It looks like 4 or 5 days in that area. He could show up today and go, I'm fine. I haven't seen him today yet, but so, yeah, we definitely got a break there.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Hobie Milner just a minute ago. I know sometimes spring training stats can be deceptive, but this is somebody who had a rougher spring training. How valuable has he been to the big club so far this season?
Oh, man, he's our stopper. And what I mean, he comes in to stop rallies in that seventh inning. He's a matchup guy for lefties, but he's very effective against righties. He can sink it. He's got the changeup. He's got the sweeper, they call it. And so anyway, and he's comfortable pitching those situations. He's done it for a while. He's pitching a postseason. So yeah, that was a big sign for us.
Josh Young over the last four games now has been kind of rocking it. And I was kind of curious on the front of the message overall and how guys are going with this. Does it feel like the guys are starting to respond to what Brett Boone's message is and what y'all are trying to accomplish here a little bit better?
Yeah, Boone's, I think, fitted real well. I think he's noticed another set of eyes and ears for these guys from a different perspective. Justin Beale's been, he'll head up to meeting. And Boone's, he told them, he says, I'm going to be observing here. I'm going to get to know you guys. But I can tell you, he's proactive. He's already talking to guys and this, the situations and the pitching. It's a ton of experience. This guy had a heck of a career, but he can translate that stuff he'd learned growing up in the game to our guys here on the offensive side, and defensive side. So, anyway, I think he's been a great fit so far.
And talking about Josh Jung, he feels like the kind of guy who hopefully doesn't complain about where he is in the batting order, but still, how much kind of resiliency or whatever does it show that he was lower in the batting order and has just chipped and moved his way back up?
Yeah, I know it's been a little fluid here. And, you know, I talked to him because he was hit ninth there a few times, and just the way he'll end up being set up, he's not a nine-hole hitter, but such a big spot for, you know, to get that lineup turned over and get on base for the other guys. And the message, I just want him to know that if he is hitting down there, I don't think he's a nine-hole hitter. But, you know, for that day, you know, we think this is the best thing or best chance to win this ball game. And don't get caught up when you're hitting, because I don't care where you hit or order, you're probably going to come out with men on base now. The guys are finding ways to get on there. Carter has really changed how we set up our order. He's a left-hander. I try to break up the righty so we don't stack similar type hitters in the same lineup. And so sometimes that will, you know, push somebody who is normally hitting fifth or sixth, you know, at the back end of the order. And so you can't get caught into that, because now that's going to affect your hitting at the plate. So, but that is my job, to kind of touch base with them when I do move guys around.
You know, I know what they're doing at the plate, important, but also, you know, what they're doing in the field and how you kind of play and juggle that with Corey Seager out. What you're playing at shortstop, it looks like you have a couple different options that you can work with. How do you manage that?
Yeah, with Corey out, I'd pretty much say that Smitty's our shortstop. Yeah, you know, he's going to be out there for the most part. I left him at first in Baltimore, but they stacked their lineup with left-hand hitters. I figured there'd be more action there. He's got more time at first base than Duran. But I will use Smitty, give, you know, somebody a day off, whether I, you know, if it's in the outfield, then you'll probably see Duran go to shortstop. So especially if it's in center field.
Every time I see a player get put on the injured list, but it's retroactive, I hope for the best that hopefully they can be ready to go as soon as the 10 days are up. Is that the hope for Corey Seager right now?
I can't say that. I think, I mean, you always have hope, I guess, but it's going to be longer than that. I think best thing I can give you right now is, it's going to be a couple weeks. We'll reevaluate him and where he's at after 2 weeks. What we want to do is get this thing right, so we don't, you know, keep doing this and keep fighting that hamstring and getting back on the IL. So we're going to do all we can to build it up here. It's going to take a little bit of time. Could be up to 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah, it could. But I can't answer that until we check him out after 2 weeks.
I know fans get disappointed about injuries in general, but I'm curious how frustrated Corey Seager gets about continuous injuries like this.
Yeah, I mean, this is why, you know, you do what you do. You love to play, and he knows we need him. He knows how important he is to our club. So, yeah, he's frustrated, especially when you're swinging the bat the way he is. He does so much for our club. The presence, how he stretches out a lineup, the damage that he does. You know, he plays a great shortstop, all those things. And so, yeah, this is why this is probably going to take a little bit longer, because we need to get this cleared up. And it's a long season. We still have a lot of games. But, you know, I'll go back to 23. We lost him for 5 weeks there. We played over 500 ball. And so this is a team with a lot of depth to it, a lot of talent, and there's no reason why we can't continue to play winning baseball, even though Corey's not in the lineup. It's never about one guy, especially in baseball. Yeah, does he help? But
this podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit mensteaclinic.com. That's MinsteeClinic.com.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app. App or wherever you get your podcasts.
But the way our pitching's going and in the depth we have in this lineup, sure, we're not quite the same team, but we're a winning team without Corey.
Well, I think all the fans out there, it's kind of in the same boat where we'd love to see him for an extended period of time. So get it right, and we'll be happy to see that for sure. Jack Leiter goes out there last night, has a really nice start. That's a really good start for Jack Leiter. For you, for him, what is the model of consistency that you're hoping to get and hoping that he kind of learns and goes out and does?
Well, every game, I hope he takes something from that game or what he could have done better. I think he's going to look at that game at, you know, again, some two strike pitches. He's going to get a little bit more consistent like he did in Cincinnati when he dominated, where, you know, he cut the breaking ball on the strike or the changeup, but it was down below the zone. He was getting some chase. For example, last night he walks two guys. Those are two guys he can't walk. You know, he's got to attack those guys. You know, it wasn't like they were the 3-4 hitters, and not a knock against them, but my point being, those aren't the guys you want to walk to get to the top part of the order. So, yeah, did he pitch well? Yeah, six innings, quality start, but it's going to get better.
Same kind of genre of question with Jake Berger. Like, what do you hope that Jake saw, heard, or learned during his stint in the minor leagues?
You know what? I think more than anything with Jake, just to relax and kind of get his balance back at the plate, get his confidence going again. You know, I think he was pressing up here. I think I really believe that. And I don't like to use that word a lot, but I think his case, who in somebody else's case, we did have a couple guys that were pressing big time. And it's fairly common with guys that join the club for the first time. So we want him to get away, take a deep breath, and catch his breath, and just get his timing back at the plate. He's been playing a great defense.
Mm-hmm.
That was terrific. That was it was good to see how quickly he just improved their first base in spring training.
Now, one of the big discussions across baseball yesterday was the removal of the ban on Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson, and players like that. I'm curious what you think about the worthiness of them as Hall of Fame players, or were you surprised that it took this long?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. when you look at what happened, I mean, it's the one rule that it's read to us every spring. It's the rule more than anything. And so, it tells you right there you'll be banned from baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the consequences you have to pay when you break that rule. Because now you're affecting the integrity of the game. And now, no doubt, you look at Pete, what he's accomplished, and you go, well, yeah, he's got to be in the Hall of Fame. But my stance is, I talked about it yesterday, they got a veterans committee. And those guys are the guys that make that decision, and I think that's fair. It's their Hall of Fame. And so they have the right to make those decisions with these players that have had the suspension lifted and they're, they now can get in the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, it's a shame. It really is this whole thing because we don't have a hits leader in there. Shoeless Joe Jackson, with a little bit I know about him, what a tremendous player, and probably got caught up in the wrong crowd there during that World Series of 19, but you break the rules, you break the law, whatever, you're going to pay the consequences.
Has your job become particularly more difficult when it comes to this, to gambling, the last few years because of how accessible daily fantasy and stuff on your phone and like all, there's so many more avenues than there used to be?
Yeah, it's kind of funny how all this has come around. Now you look at watching sports and you've seen all these gambling commercials, isn't it? No, it really hasn't affected me. Although they do want the lineups up at a certain time. I think it's by 3 o'clock in the day so they can put their lines out, whatever. But, you know, if we ever get approached, a player, anybody, it just mentions something, whether it's an injury or whatever, then we have to report it and just watch very closely. You saw an umpire this winter. Unfortunately, he lost his job. It's because he was on the same website of this other guy that was betting on the game, and that's a shame. And you got to watch it. I don't think the umpire, from what I could gather, was doing anything wrong. But you know, they just tell you can't do that. You're guilty.
Well, we appreciate the time very much. Opportunity for a sweep tonight, and I know those are tough to come by. So, best of luck, and thank you again for your time.
Hey, guys, always good talking with you. I'm sorry I sound kind of weird, but I'm getting over this crud right now.
Everybody's got the crud right now, Boach.
No
okay,
worries.
Man.
Just keep winning, and we're good. Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you.
There you go. Go get Rangers, Boach.
Bruce Bochy right here on 105.3 The Fan. So just real quick, and I know the Derrick Henry thing.
Just wanted to beat out there. The Corey Seager thing is the thing that's hurting you right now.
So,
well, guess what? Your friend Josh Smith is now the starting shortstop.
That's
true. Everybody gets what they want.
It was the line that Boach said. I might be paraphrasing, but not a lot. When he goes, "Hey, anything is possible."
But like,
oh no!
And probably he said, not.
Yeah, he said. And look, this is one of the things I love about Bochy. Well, first of all, he brought us a World Series. Never ever forget that. One of the things that I love is it feels like he's very upfront.
Oh, he's direct.
Yeah.
He doesn't beat around the bush with these questions.
And with Martin, he's like, "We don't know for sure yet, but I wouldn't rule out an IL stint." And then you get a breakdown for Luke Jackson, which again, that feels like you caught a huge break by a lack of a break right there. And it's hand swelling and he could be good to go sooner rather than later. But it was the, "We're going to reevaluate Corey Seager in a couple of weeks." And so then you heard it like, "Hey, it could end up being 3 or 4 weeks." And then he dropped the 2023. "We were without him for 5 weeks," which in my mind kind of feels like, "Hey, so just in case it ends up going 5 weeks, just like prepare your brain."
And I think that's also a prepare your team that way too. Guys,
yes,
we've done it before. We can do it again. Not just the fan base. Like I think there might be a lot of more hope right now because of the fact they look like they're hitting the ball again. You know, and it's not just this like, "What are we doing, guys?" They look like they're doing that a little bit more. So I think there's a little more hope. And that, you know, the Seager injury kind of, "Oh no, somebody said drive this thing right off the bridge." No, Boach is like, "No, we got this thing."
I might have made
up
a facial expression that was very concerning.
I did too. But Boach knows. Like, he knows, look, we got a lot of really good other players on this team. Just time for them to do their thing.
And I'm not saying that this was the case, but when Boach says, "We want to take the time, make sure we get this right once and for all,"
yes,
it kind of leads you to believe that, like, maybe they didn't rush him, but maybe all parties involved were like, "Yeah, no, I think I'm good enough."
That was the conversation I asked you the other day. Will he ever be healthy again?
Yeah.
And the idea me and you and Alec all discussed was not if they keep putting him back out there whenever it's just enough and they need him. You know, they need his bat in the lineup, so we got to go out. You got to go put him out there. Well, now he has the opportunity to, "Hey, we got Smitty.
Yeah.
We'll take care of it. You need to fix it and then get back out on the field."
So moving to the football, I don't know why I said that.
It's a little weird, but I'm proud of you.
Moving to football, Ian Rappaport is rapporting that the Ravens and Derrick Henry have agreed to a 2-year contract extension. It's $15 million per year. So 2 years, $30 million. $25 million guaranteed, most money ever for a running back over 30. And I believe this is just behind the contract numbers that Saquon Barkley got with his extension, which makes a lot of sense.
Oh, man!
Yeah,
great.
I'm not that excited about it for him. But, and listen, the whole he's not a Cowboy thing, I've forgotten all about that. I've moved on completely from it altogether.
Do you know, I did too until Jerry said, who even knows if he'd be any good here?
And I get
I'm like,
that.
Come on.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I thought their offensive line was bad last year.
Fair.
And so I agreed with him on that. Now, for him, though, he's a Raven. When I watch him play, he looks like a Raven. He's type of player that fits their mold.
Because he like big and mean.
Yeah, he's just one of those. And when he puts that uniform on, he looks right in that Ravens uniform. So I'm excited as an NFL fan that we'd get to continue watching him be a Raven for a little bit. Because they're going to be interesting next year, too, trying to build, rebuild and get back to what they were doing this year.
Now, I wanted to throw one more thing out. I know, Corey, you'll usually say you do not have the financial funds to make this happen, so I understand that. But I want to check something. Alec, do you know the movie Blue Chips?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Can you give me a basic plot synopsis of the
movie? I haven't seen it in forever, but I know it. Yeah.
Okay. So Penny Hardaway's Butch McRae jersey is going on the auction block from that movie. And
I can't decide if I would rather have that or Jesus Shuttlesworth.
Ooh, I think I would go with that one just because he was the main character or like one of the two main characters. In this movie, I think of Butch McRae's mom as the main character when she goes, all I know is that a foul is not a foul if the referee doesn't blow their whistle. And you're like, oh, give him that money, get that house. Now, I know really realistically Nick Nolte's trying to get back with his ex-wife or whatever is the real main character. But I just thought that that was really cool. And that's a movie I haven't seen in a couple of years, but I've definitely watched it too many times. And it is odd how like kind of prophetic part of it feels in terms of like, hey, we've gone too far. Just make it all legal. You want a house? You want $6 million? No problem. We're just going to go ahead and make it all legal.
Yeah, that was a fun movie, dude. How much did you say it was?
The auction is still going right now and it's going to be open until June the 2nd.
All right. Okay.
So we still got some time to put some money together.
Let's say it's 50 grand. It feels like that's too much, but let's say it's 50 grand. Would you rather have that or an actual life-size animatronic Kool-Aid man?
Oh yeah. I want that second one. By the way, bidding's only 2,500 right now.
Okay. Yeah. I think we can get the Kool-Aid man then. I think we're going after the Kool-Aid man.
Now, we got C Block coming up, but before we get to that, I feel
let's give something away!
Caller number 10 right now, 877-881-1053, will win a pair of tickets to go see Shakira on her world tour when she stops by Globe Life Field June 11th. You can, of course, buy tickets, or you can win them for free right now, 877-881-1053. Coming up next, C Block.
Which coach in DFW or across the country would you like to ride with for a while? Next on The Fan.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit mensteaclinic.com. That's mensteaclinic.com.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now. And what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.